Today's National Authors Day. The idea was originated in 1928 by a woman from Illinois, Bement, Illinois, which is not too far from Champaign in central Illinois. Basically, the idea is that we should give some credit to our authors and to give appreciation to them. Have you ever thought about writing a book? This is what I want to talk about. How does the process work? How do you get a book published? Do you self-publish? Can you get one of the big publishers? And with us today is Doug Grad. He's been in the business of book publishing since 1986. He's worked with the big guys, Simon & Schuster, Ballantine, Penguin, HarperCollins. And since about 2008, he works on the other side of it, and he is a literary agent who represents authors in all different genres. He's got a Chicago connection. He spent 4 years here at Northwestern University and edited Ditka, Monster of the Midway. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Karen. How are you?
You're joining us from Vermont, where you have a house, and it's snowing, or it's snowy, right?
Well, yes, now it's just freezing rain. So welcome to the beautiful fall in Vermont.
Yes, right. I saw the picture you sent me. It was just stunningly beautiful. We're going to talk a little bit about just what does a literary agent do? And if you write a book, do you need one?
Well, you know, an agent is really a marriage broker, first and foremost. You know, we match up the authors with the editors and make the deal and make sure everything runs smoothly. And then once that is in place, then our job shifts and we become the marriage counselor. So sometimes there's a lot of hand-holding involved, you know, if things hit a bit of a rough spot. Do you need an agent? No, nobody needs an agent to write a book. If you want to sell one, though, it's almost impossible to get a deal with a major publisher without one. They just won't even look at your material.
And when you, so if you're out there writing a book and you have an idea for a book, what are some, and we're going to take a quick break because we had some little difficulties here, but what are some of the things that you should think about as an author? You have an idea for a memoir, you have an idea for a how-to book, you have an idea for a novel. What should you be keeping in mind if you want eventually to sell the book?
Well, you know, the first thing you have to keep in mind is, do I have a story to tell that other people are interested in reading about, whether it's personal, whether it's business related, whether it's a cookbook, whether it's a novel? You know, you have to have something to say. If you just think, oh, this will be a fun way to pass the time, find something else, find another hobby to do. And you've got to be a good writer. You know, there's no way around that. I'm not saying you have to have a graduate program from a major university, a graduate degree from a major university, but you have to have practiced your craft. You have to have been writing constantly, every day, even if it's just to keep a journal. Just get in the habit of writing. That's a great way to start.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Doug Grad, who is a literary agent in New York. And if you have any questions for him, 312-981-7200. Back in a minute. Happy National Authors Day to you and to yours. We're here with Doug Grad, who has a Doug Grad Literary Agency. Doug, why don't you give out your website, which actually has a lot of very good information on it for people who might be interested in writing a book?
Sure. It's www.dgliterary.com. So it's just my initials, DG, and then LITERARY.com.
Okay, Doug, take me through this process. Let's say I want to write a how-to book on how to host a radio show in Chicago. What? Yeah, I guess I know a little bit about it, but maybe not as much as I should. But let's just say that that's my book, and I want to target people who always wanted the radio show, and I have this experience. What should I focus on? What's the first thing I should do?
Well, I think the first thing you need to do is put together a book proposal. And the book proposal is going to be a framework that will tell the publisher what your story is without you having to write the entire book. You know, once you've got a book proposal together, you can get an agent who's going to work on it with you, make it ready for a publisher to see it. I would say most nonfiction sells on a proposal, maybe about 40 pages or so, 40 to 60 pages, double-spaced. It makes it a lot faster and easier for editors and publishers to acquire nonfiction, makes it a lot faster and easier for authors and agents to sell nonfiction.
And how do you, as a literary agent, get the publishers interested in the book? First of all, obviously, you're going to pick and choose what you think is saleable. Otherwise, you're wasting your time. If it's a book about some obscure topic that doesn't have any saleability, that's not probably something you're going to pick up. Is that fair to say?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, part of the agent's job is to know the players in the industry. And I've been around for 30-something years, so I know all the people at the top of the industry, at the middle of the industry, you know, and as new people come into the industry, I get to work with them as well. So it really helps me to focus in on who to submit a proposal to. So, you know, the first thing is you need to have an amazing story to tell, and then it has to be communicated extremely well on the page or on the screen, actually. You know, and to give you an idea of what would go into a book proposal, aside from your cover page with your title, you would want like a one-page overview that gives a quick idea and broad brushstrokes of what the book's going to be about, a chapter-by-chapter synopsis with a few sentences about each chapter, an amazing sample chapter. And then you get to the sort of marketing part of the proposal where you have comp titles, your comparison competitive titles, maybe three or four recent well-regarded books that have a similarity or even differences to your proposed books, your marketing, promotion, and publicity ideas, anything that you can bring as an author. So if you have a radio show and you want to write about that, you would include your contacts in the media. That would help you perhaps to sell a book. Then you finish up with an author bio. You tell a little bit about yourself, other books you may have written, what your current job is, a little bit of your family, and oftentimes an author photo so that, you know, you can show publishers you don't look like the Phantom of the Opera and you would be a welcome presence on television.
So it's interesting that marketing, your ability to self-market is part of the whole package, whereas I would imagine, and maybe I'm wrong, but 30 years ago, that wasn't really an issue. If an author wrote a book and it was good and it was accepted, the author wasn't expected to be the one out there on Facebook and Twitter marketing his book. Right?
Sure. Well, especially since those didn't even exist 30 years
ago. Right.
I remember my first job at Pocket Books. My boss said, we were just talking about the business. He said, it's our job to acquire the books and it's the sales department's job to figure out how to sell them. And now the sales department sits in on the editorial meetings and it's the sales and publicity people and marketing people who will have just as big an influence as the editors will in what gets acquired.
So let's say that somebody at one of the big publishing houses decides that this is a book that they want to publish, How to Be a Talk Show Host. And what happens next? Is there money that gets exchanged? Is there a contract? And then what are the obligations on both sides of the book and the writer and the publisher?
Well, yeah. Let's say publisher A really loves the book, and they want it, and they're going to make a monetary offer, which will consist of an advance, which is an advance against royalties, future royalties, the payout, how the advance is divided up, what the actual royalties are going to be, and the various rights that are going to be acquired, which can be things like audio, font, publication, for serial rights. Usually not, but some publishers try to acquire television or film rights, and you start negotiating. Sometimes you'll have multiple publishers want something at once, and that's always great. You get to have really an auction. You're auctioning off the property to multiple bidders. That's a little scary, but it can be a lot of fun, too.
We're talking to Doug Grad, who's a literary agent in New York, and we're talking about how to publish a book and what the whole business is about these days in honor of National Authors Day. We'll be back in a minute, and you're listening to WGN. We're with Doug Grad talking about being a literary agent. Sounds really exciting. So let's talk a little bit, Doug, about, you know, and again, this is obviously going to vary, but let's just say that you're my little book about how to be a radio show host. They decide to take it. One of the publishers takes it. What kind of money are we talking about as a contract for just the rights to publish the book?
Well, you know, the that's a tough question to answer.
It is, yeah.
The range these days is pretty much 0 to millions, and mostly, of course, they're in between. I've made deals that had no advance but high royalties, and that paid off very nicely. I remember one, we got a check for $20,000 on our first royalty check, which was great. I've also made six-figure deals that the books never even came close to earning back their advances. So, you know, in a way, it's like the movies. There were low-budget films and mega blockbusters, not a lot in between. You have a lot of big advances in publishing, New York Times bestselling authors, small advances for new authors or sometimes genre fiction authors. But that in-between area that we call the mid-list, where most authors reside, it's been shrinking for a couple of decades. It squeezes out people who are only moderately successful. So a lot of those folks will actually start writing under a pseudonym. It's strange, but, you know, certain authors can write for years in obscurity before hitting it big. You know, I think of Elmore Leonard, who became an overnight success after only 20 years. There's a lot of others you could say the same thing about. I mean, even John Grisham and Dan Brown wrote a couple of early novels that got pretty much no attention, and then they had their big blockbusters.
Right, right. So you were talking to me a little bit about an author that you are representing now, and can you tell our listeners a little bit about it as an example of what you do? And this is regarding the BTK killer and the daughter of the BTK killer. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about her story?
Sure. Kerry Rawson is the daughter of Dennis Rader, who was the BTK killer out in Wichita. And on the day that he was arrested, which was, I want to say 2005, maybe it was 2004, I don't remember, was, of course, the day she and her family found out that their entire lives had been a lie, you know, that he had been killing people not only before she was born, but after she was born. He was married, had two children, was a church congregation president, worked for the city of Wichita, was a scoutmaster. So on the outside, sort of a normal middle-class average guy, and had this very dark side to his personality. So Kerry got introduced to me through a reporter in Wichita who I had done, had worked with on a book about her father. And we got the introduction made, and I said to Kerry, you know, I think you have a book here. And we worked on her proposal, I don't know, maybe for 3 years, 4 years. It was a long time because it was very traumatic for her to go over this piece of her life. It was therapeutic in some ways, but very difficult for her. And finally, when I took it out to publishers, I thought we had a terrific proposal. All the New York publishers passed on it. And they said, well, we already have a BTK book. I said, well, then you really didn't read this proposal very closely, because this is not about BTK. And this was Kerry's own personal story, and it was about overcoming this trauma in her life. And Kerry has a strong faith element to her life, and that was portrayed strongly in the book proposal. And we ended up selling the book to Thomas Nelson out of Nashville, and they are a Christian imprint that's part of HarperCollins. And I have to say, we didn't get as much money as I thought we would get, but they did such an amazing job of publishing this book. Oh my God, they were terrific. Lovely, lovely people, hard working. They hired an outside publicity firm, and they got Kerry on the cover of People magazine. They got her on Dr. Phil, Dr. Oz. There was a 2020 two-hour special that was about Kerry and her father. ID Discovery did another two-hour documentary, and Sony Pictures Television optioned the scripted TV rights for this, and they just renewed the option. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that this actually goes into production.
So
someday.
Doug, you know, just from, you know, maybe it's because I'm interested in crime and true crime, and I've always been fascinated by it, even as a kid, you know, talking about the Boston Strangler and all of these things. You know, how could they not pick up on this? This seems like a great story. It's a it's a story that has to do with true crime, but really it's the relationship. And if it hadn't been written before, I mean, why do you think the publishers just overlooked this?
You know, that's That's the $64,000 question, I guess. And it's, I think, also one of the reasons why I'm an agent and no longer an editor in the corporate publishing structure, because the editor's singular vision of what could succeed has been taken out of the equation. It's all decision by committee now. An editor will take a book into an editorial meeting, and you have to have, you know, all of the thumbs going up in the room, or else the book proposal, you know, figuratively gets fed to the lions. And I don't think anything good ever comes out of a decision by committee in a creative process. Do you need other points of view and other areas of input? Yes, you do. But you also need somebody with a strong vision who says, I get this. I see how we can make this work. And I didn't find that until I went to Thomas Nelson.
I've got just a few seconds here left, but has reading changed since we have e-reading? I looked it up, and it looks like 18% of the books purchased are e-books. I thought it was a lot higher than that, but are people reading differently because of e-books?
No, they're not reading necessarily differently. And it's actually about 25% of the market. It was almost, it was heading towards a third of the market, but it's retreated a bit. I love reading on my Kindle. Some people hate reading on it. I remember giving my dad for his 88th birthday a Kindle, and he opened with the box, and he was like, oh, don't tell me you got me a Kindle. And he was a voracious reader. He loved thrillers and mysteries. And 2 weeks later, he called me back, and he said, this is the best birthday present I've ever got. And I think what e-readers do is it makes it easier to read more books because they don't pile up all over the house.
Well, and you've got the glossary, you can look up words.
$150 a month for a storage locker for my books, and I should have my head examined. That's insane.
I'm going to have to say goodbye here, but we're going to have you on again. Doug Grad, the Doug Grad Literary Agency, could you remind us again what of your website?
www.dgliterary.com. And Karen, thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you, and happy National Authors Day to you.
Oh, thank you. You too.
Take care.